Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 50. I'm going to cover verses 29 till the end of the chapter, which is verse 46. I will call this chapter Judgment on Babylon Part B, because I did Part A in the previous audio, verses 1 through 28. Same topic, the judgment on Babylon. This prophecy was given by Jeremiah in the fourth year of Zedekiah. Zedekiah started ruling in 597, so this is around 593 or so that he gave the prophecy against Babylon. So we start now in verses 29 through 32 of Jeremiah 50. Summon archers against Babylon, all those who draw the bow. Encamp all around her, let no one escape. Repay her for her deeds, do to her as she has done, for she has defied the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. Therefore her young men will fall in the streets, all her soldiers will be silenced in that day, declares the Lord. See, I am against you, O arrogant one, declares the Lord Almighty, for your day has come, the time for you to be punished. The arrogant one will stumble and fall, and no one will help her up. I will kindle a fire in her towns that will consume all who are around her. Now in verse 29, Yahweh rhetorically asks for archers to come against Babylon. That is referring to the Persians, because the Medes, which were part of the Persian Empire, the Medes and the Persians, and the Elamites, who were also part of the Persian Empire, the Medes being to the north and the Elamites being to the southwest, they were all well skilled in archery, especially the Elamites. And so we see here that this is referring to the Persians. As John Gill says, Cyrus, when he took Babylon, ordered a proclamation to be made that the inhabitants should keep within doors and that whoever were found in the streets should be put to death, as doubtless many were. That might be referring to verse 30. Therefore her young men will fall in the streets. And Gill says that Cyrus gave an order that everybody should stay indoors, and if you don't, you go out into the streets, you're going to get killed. Now, that fits Cyrus pretty good, but we see in verse 32, I will kindle a fire in her towns. The famous Cyrus cylinder talks about the conquest of Babylon by Cyrus the Great of Persia in 539 BC, and Cyrus was very gentle on Babylon. He didn't destroy the city. Maybe he burnt the towns around, I don't know. But this brings up a problem that we're going to talk about later in this chapter. Jeremiah is basically predicting desolation of Babylon, which did not happen in 539 with Cyrus. Now, the way that many commentators handle that is that Jeremiah predicts the fall of Babylon to Persia, which occurred in the time of Cyrus in 539 BC, but the desolation didn't take place till later as years go by. It just took a long time for Babylon to be destroyed. Today, she is nothing but a pile of mud. So we go now to Jeremiah 50, verses 33 through 38. This is what the Lord Almighty says. The people of Israel are oppressed, and the people of Judah as well. All their captors hold them fast, refusing to let them go. Yet their Redeemer is strong. The Lord Almighty is his name. He will vigorously defend their cause so that he may bring rest to their land, but unrest to those who live in Babylon. A sword against the Babylonians, declares the Lord. Against those who live in Babylon, and against her officials and wise men. A sword against her false prophets, they will become fools. A sword against her warriors, they will be filled with terror. A sword against her horses and chariots and all the foreigners in her ranks, they will become women. A sword against her treasurers, they will be plundered. A drought on her waters, they will dry up. For it is a land of idols, idols that will go mad with terror. Now in verse 33, Jeremiah singles out the people of northern Israel as well as the people of southern Israel. He says the people of Israel are oppressed, and there that's talking about northern Israel, because in the next part of the verse he mentions the people of Judah, which is obviously meant to be a contrast to Israel. So we got both northern and southern Israel being oppressed by Babylon. Now, that's a problem because Israel, of course, was destroyed, northern Israel, in 722 by the Assyrians under Sargon II. And here we are talking about the people of Judah being captive in 586. Well, that fact has led John Gill, who completely ignores Old Testament types and immediately fulfills them in the New Testament. He says that this fact, this double mention of Israel and Judah shows that Jeremiah could not be referring to the historical people of Israel and Judah, but rather is referring to all of Israel converted in the times of the Messiah. And of course, since that hasn't happened yet, he has to push it off way off into the future when allegedly a whole bunch of Jews are going to come into the kingdom. Well, I never have liked how John Gill always does that. It's much simpler just to interpret the verse this way. The people of Israel are oppressed. Yeah, they're oppressed. They're in exile. They've been in exile since 722. And since Babylon is now controlling the area that Assyria used to control, the people of Israel are oppressed. They're oppressed by Babylon, even though Assyria was the one who originally got the northern Israelites into exile. So I think that Gill's argument is very, very weak. Now in verse 34, Jeremiah says that the redeemer of the captives is strong. The NIV has redeemer capitalized. That's obviously got to be referring to Yahweh. The redeemer is strong. The Lord Almighty is his name. Gill says that refers to Jesus. John Gill, he's a brilliant man, but sometimes he has some off-the-wall stuff. At the end of verse 34, this redeemer will defend the cause of the captives so that Yahweh will bring rest to their land. Now, rest is a standard description of getting to the promised land. When you get into the promised land, you are at rest. And that is a standard type for the spiritual kingdom of God. When you get to the kingdom of God, you're in the promised land and you cease from your labors. You don't work for your righteousness anymore. We read that in Hebrews 4:3. For we who have believed enter the rest. In keeping with what he has said, so I swore in my anger, they will not enter my rest, talking about the Jews on the Exodus entering into the promised land because of their idolatry and all. They didn't enter the promised land, but they fell in the wilderness. They will not enter my rest, and yet his works have been finished since the foundation of the world. All right, so entering the rest is what we do when we rest in Christ. Well, here in verse 34, the word is used a little bit differently. The captives will see the rest in their land. The rest is brought to the land of Israel. In other words, there's peace there, but there's unrest to those who live in Babylon, because there's not going to be peace in Babylon when Cyrus and the Persians come. Verse 35, a sword against the Babylonians. Now here Yahweh keeps talking about a sword. It's very effective rhetorically. Jeremiah is a great writer. So the Babylonians get a sword. Her officials get a sword. Her wise men get a sword in verse 35. Those wise men would be the counselors of state. The false prophets get a sword in verse 36. They become a fool, each of them. The warriors get a sword in verse 36. They're filled with terror. Even the horses and chariots get a sword. And all the foreigners in her ranks, in verse 37, they get a sword too. They will become women. The foreigners will become women. Obviously, this is at a time when you could say things like that. Can't say things like that because now we're living in screwed up feminist America where you can't mention a woman's weakness because that would be sexist. So Jeremiah says all the foreigners, that would be all the mercenaries, all the constituent kingdoms who provide troops to the Persian army, there will be all the foreigners in her ranks would refer to mercenaries, those soldiers of the constituent nations who make up the Babylonian army. They will become women. And also the treasures of Babylon. They get a sword too in verse 37. The treasures would be plundered. In verse 38, the waters don't get a sword because that wouldn't make any sense, but they get a drought. They will dry up. Some commentators say that this is a reference to the drying up of the Euphrates, which Cyrus did in order that his troops could march up the dry riverbed and get under the portcullis that guarded the gates of Babylon on the night of Belshazzar's feast in 539. Or it just could mean that the city will not have any water in the midst of disaster coming upon it. Maybe the disaster did not happen in 539 with Cyrus, but as time went on, as we'll see in just a minute, plenty of disasters came on the city of Babylon. For it is a land of idols, in verse 38. Idols that will go mad with terror. Idols are personified there, even though they are made of wood and stone. And if the idols go crazy because they're so scared, well, that means the people who are worshiping those idols, they're going to go crazy too from being scared. We go down to Jeremiah 50, verses 39 through 46, and we will finish this chapter. So desert creatures and hyenas will live there. And there the owl will dwell. It will never again be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. As God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah along with their neighboring towns, declares the Lord, so no one will live there. No man will dwell in it. Look, an army is coming from the north, a great nation, and many kings are being stirred up from the ends of the earth. They are armed with bows and spears. They are cruel and without mercy. They sound like the roaring sea as they ride on their horses. They come like men in battle formation to attack you, O daughter of Babylon. The king of Babylon has heard reports about them, and his hands hang limp. Anguish has gripped him, pain like that of a woman in labor. Like a lion coming up from Jordan's thickets to a rich pasture land, I will chase Babylon from its land in an instant. Who is the chosen one I will appoint for this? Who is like me, and who can challenge me? And what shepherd can stand against me? Therefore hear what the Lord has planned against Babylon, what he has purposed against the land of the Babylonians. The young of the flock will be dragged away. He will completely destroy their pasture because of them. At the sound of Babylon's capture, the earth will tremble. Its cry will resound among the nations. Now in verse 39 of chapter 50 of Jeremiah, Jeremiah prophesies that Babylon will never again be inhabited. Now Jeremiah here is echoing Isaiah's words when Isaiah prophesied against Babylon. We read in Isaiah 13 verses 19 through 20, and Babylon, the jewel of the kingdoms, the glory of the pride of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. It will never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. A nomad will not pitch his tent there, and shepherds will not let their flocks rest there. Now, many interpreters observe that this destruction of Babylon was gradually accomplished, not immediately accomplished. John Gill says that. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that. I'm going to give you a history of the fall of Babylon in just a minute, or right now, actually. Well, first of all, Tyrus took it in 539, as we know, and so Babylon became a province of Persia. It was no longer the capital of the empire. That was 539, and then sometime in the reign of Darius, who started to reign in 522, nobody knows the date exactly, some people say around 520, Darius the First, when Babylon revolted, Darius the First came from his capital, which I guess was at Susa, I'm not sure where he was at the time, at the Persian capital. He came with an army and besieged Babylon and destroyed the walls when he succeeded in that siege. That was the great story of Zopias, the guy who cut his ears and nose off and whipped himself and pretended that the Persians had done that so he could get into Babylon and say, I'm deserting from the Persian army. Babylonians let me lead soldiers against the Persians. And then Zopias betrays the Babylonians and lets the Persians in the city, and the city is Kaputsky. That was around 520 or so. And then when we get down to 305 to 281, which is the time of the reign of Seleucus I Nicator, the famous Seleucid emperor. He was one of the successor Greek generals after Alexander the Great. Babylon was drained both of its inhabitants and its riches by Seleucus I, because Seleucus I built a city named after him, of course, Seleucia. And if you look at a map, which I've got here, you got Babylon on the Euphrates River. And then this is an area where the Euphrates bends towards the Tigris, and the Tigris bends toward the Euphrates, so they are very close together. So those two rivers are very close together. So if you go maybe about 100 miles, maybe 90 miles to the northeast, mostly north, north-northeast, is Seleucia on the Tigris River. And so Seleucus I is moving everything from Babylon to Seleucia. All right, Seleucus I was 305 to 281. A little bit later, the Parthians are now controlling the area. The Parthians ruled from 247 BC to 224 AD. They took everything that was left in Babylon and took it to Ctesiphon, which is a city very close to Seleucia, very close to present-day Baghdad. I'm looking at a map. They look like they're almost at the same spot. Babylon is about 55 miles southwest of Ctesiphon. So we're talking about Babylon, Seleucia, and Ctesiphon being close together, and we're talking about different empires taking all the wealth of Babylon out and putting that wealth into different cities. And so, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown points out, by the time you get to the Roman Emperor Hadrian's time, which is 117 to 138, the Roman Emperor AD, 117 to 138 AD, there was nothing but walls left. In Jerome's time, 342-347 is roughly when he was born, to 420 AD, Babylon was a park for the kings of Persia to hunt in, or for the king of Persia to hunt in. Well, so what does it look like today? This is from HowStuffWorks.com. If you took a trip to Babylon today, located 55 miles south of Baghdad, you'd see a tacky recreation built by Saddam Hussein in the 1970s that's been partially destroyed by decades of war. It's a sad ending to such a fabled city. So it seems to me that Jeremiah's prophecy has been fulfilled nicely, both by the capture of Babylon by Cyrus and the destruction of the city over the ages. However, not everybody agrees with that. First of all, liberals say that Jeremiah failed. He said that no one would ever occupy the land again. Well, look at the land between the rivers, between the Tigris and Euphrates, is Iraq, and there's lots of people there now. It's not just desert creatures and hyenas and owls like Jeremiah said in verse 39. Jeremiah said the area would never be inhabited or lived in from generation to generation. So Jeremiah is a failed prophet. Well, that's nonsense. Liberals are impious blasphemers most of the time. At best, or at worst, maybe at best, they try to understand, but they can't understand. Their presuppositions keep them from believing in the God that inspires prophets and prophecy. Well, let's look at some conservative views, futurist. They say that this prophecy has not been fulfilled yet. They, like the liberals, point out that Jeremiah said that never again would Babylon be inhabited, and it has been inhabited, the area has, the area of the empire at least, maybe not the city. And so that means that Babylon's going to be destroyed sometime in the future and never be inhabited again. I guess there's a new Babylon that's going to be created. Well, I'm not very keen on futurist interpretation since I'm an Orthodox preterist. So let's see what a preterist or historicist might say about the fulfillment of Jeremiah's prophecy. Jameson Fawcett Brown, I wouldn't call him a preterist, but he's an old commentator. He says that Jeremiah's prophecy is fulfilled not immediately, but by degrees. Now, there's a problem with that view, and that's the view I've espoused so far, but let me point out the problem. I've been talking about Babylon, the city, is never going to be inhabited again, and now it's nothing but a heap of ruins. Now, if you take Babylon to be the city, you got a pretty good case that it's been destroyed, and that's why I gave you that case. But the argument against that is that the context of this prophecy says that Babylon, the land, is never again to be inhabited. Now, to show you how strong that argument is, but I'm going to refute it later, but to show you how strong that argument is, let's look at some context. I'm going to read you from Wiki Answers. The original question posed refers specifically to the prophecy of Jeremiah 50, which states concerning Babylon, the land of the Chaldeans, not just the one-time capital city, also called by the name Babylon. It is repeated, for a nation has come up against her out of the north. It will make her land an object of horror. That's verse 3. Verse 1 has already mentioned land. Now verse 3 does too. The land is made an object of horror, not just the city uninhabited. All through the two chapters, that's 50 and 51, the identification of Babylon as the land, the nation, the empire, and not just the one-time capital city, also once called Babylon, is repeated over and over. Chaldea, not just the city of Babylon, will become plunder in verse 10. Chaldea is the whole region of Babylon. Behold, she will be the least of the nations, not least of the cities, a wilderness, a parched land, and a desert. That's verse 12. I am going to punish the king of Babylon and his land. That's verse 18, not just his city. The noise of battle is in the land. That's in verse 22. It is a work of the Lord God of hosts in the land of the Chaldeans. Verse 25. Not just the one-time capital city, also called at one time Babylon. There is a sound of fugitives and refugees from the land of Babylon in verse 28. That means from the country, the empire, the nation, not just the one-time capital city also once called Babylon. I shall set fire to his cities, that's plural, not just one city, and it will devour all his environs in verse 32. His purposes which he has purposed against the land of the Chaldeans, verse 45, not the city but the land. Foreigners will devastate her land. Devote all her army to destruction, and they will fall down slain in the land of the Chaldeans. That's in the next chapter, Jeremiah 51, verses 2 through 4. I will repay Babylon and all the inhabitants of Chaldea. That's in verse 24 of chapter 51. Not just the inhabitants of the one-time capital city once called Babylon. The purposes of the Lord against Babylon stand to make the land of Babylon, not just the city, a desolation without inhabitants. Verse 29 of chapter 51. The sea has come up over Babylon. She has been engulfed with its tumultuous waves. Her cities, plural, not just one, have become an object of horror, a parched land and a desert, and her whole land will be put to shame. Well, that's very nice. But if you look at the immediate context of verse 39, which says it will never again be inhabited, if you look at the immediate context of that verse, verse 40, we will see God talking about cities as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah along with their neighboring towns. So he's talking about towns. So you could reasonably infer that Jeremiah in verse 39 is talking about a city that will never again be inhabited, the city of Babylon. There's another way you can answer the objection that Jeremiah is saying that the whole land of the Chaldeans will never be inhabited again and it will be desolate. Well, the land that is inhabited today is Iraq. It's not Babylon. Babylon, the empire, ceased to exist after Cyrus. So if you want to insist in verse 39 that it's the empire of Babylon and not the city of Babylon that will be deserted and only have owls and hyenas in it, well, Babylon is not inhabited today because it doesn't exist. Iraq does. Iraq exists, and it has inhabitants in it, but Babylon doesn't because Babylon's not there anymore. And so I'm going to stick with the interpretation that the destruction of Babylon is referring to the destruction of Babylon, the city, and of course, the whole empire of Babylon went down when the city went down, and we don't need to take Jeremiah's reference to the desolation where nobody will live in Babylon forever and ever. We don't need to take that as referring to the whole area between the Tigris and Euphrates River. In verse 41, Jeremiah says, an army is coming from the north. That's because Persia is to the north of Babylon. If you look at the map, you go east over the Tigris River, go north, you get to Media right before you get to the Caspian Sea. A great nation and many kings are being stirred up from the ends of the earth. Persia had a lot of constituent nations within it. Jeremiah 51:27 says this, raise a signal flag in the land, blow a ram's horn among the nations, set apart the nations against her, summon kingdoms against her, Ararat, Mene, and Ashkenaz, appoint a marshal against her, bring up horses like a swarm of locusts. Well, these little kingdoms of Ararat, Mene, and Ashkenaz, which I will look at when we get to the next chapter, they were part of the Persian Empire, and they came down on Babylon when Cyrus beat Babylon. In fact, Xenophon, the famous ancient Greek historian, says that Armenians, that's the area between the Black Sea and the Caspian Sea, and right south of that area, north of Iraq, Xenophon says that Armenians and other subdued nations, other nations subdued by Cyrus, they were in the army that came against Babylon. So that explains the reference to many kings coming against Babylon in verse 41. And so we have some typical military language. Verse 42, these kings are coming with bows and spears. They're cruel. They sound like the roaring sea. They come in battle formation to attack you, O daughter of Babylon. Daughter, of course, is the standard symbol of population, the population of Babylon. I'm still assuming the city here. The king of Babylon has heard reports about them, and his hands hang limp. Anguish has gripped him, pain like that of a woman in labor. The king of Babylon at this time was Nabonidus, but he was kind of a bookish guy who had kind of de facto abdicated from his throne. He was studying archaeology, and his regent, Belshazzar, had taken over. And so this is probably who is being referred to here by the king of Babylon, Belshazzar, I'm guessing. Verse 44, like a lion coming up from Jordan's thickets. That's a common metaphor. Apparently there were a lot of lions in the bushes around the Jordan River. They come to a rich pasture land. You got rich pastures, lots of grass, which means there's lots of animals chewing on that grass, lots of oxen, lots of sheep, and so the lions will see that, run out of their thickets, and start chomping down on the innocent animals. Likewise, Babylon's going to be chomped on by the Persians in an instant. Now, Jeremiah is using the same language he used against Edom in a previous chapter. And Jeremiah 49:19-21, the last chapter, Jeremiah says this, "Look, it will be like a lion coming from the thickets of the Jordan to the watered grazing land. Indeed, I will chase Edom away from her land in a flash," in an instant, in a flash. Lions coming out of the thickets, very similar language. "I will appoint whoever is chosen for her. For who is like me? Who will summon me? Who is the shepherd who can stand against me?" Tarka questions. The answer is nobody. Verse 20, "Therefore hear the plans that the Lord has drawn up against Edom and the strategies he has devised against the people of Teman. The flock's little lambs will certainly be dragged away and their grazing land will be made desolate because of them." Jeremiah promises the same thing for the flocks of Babylon. "At the sound of their fall, the earth will quake." Jeremiah says the same thing about Babylon. Earthquakes symbolize the fall of regimes, the fall of kingdoms. So going back to verse 44, in the middle of the verse, Jeremiah asked, or Yahweh asked through Jeremiah, "Who is the chosen one I will appoint for this?" That would be Cyrus. "Who is like me and who can challenge me?" Is there anybody that can stand up against God, that can stand up against God's agent, Cyrus? No. "What shepherd can stand against me?" In other words, what political leader, what general can stand against Yahweh? Nobody. "Therefore, hear what the Lord has planned against Babylon, what he has purposed against the land of the Babylonians. The young of the flock will be dragged away," just like Jeremiah prophesied against Edom. "He will completely destroy their pasture because of them." God will completely destroy the Babylonians' pasture because of them, the Babylonians. In other words, because of the Babylonians' sin, that's why their pasture gets destroyed, their wealth. Verse 46, "At the sound of Babylon's capture, the earth will tremble, its cry will resound among the nations." Now in verse 46, Jeremiah just talks about Babylon's capture. He doesn't mention its destruction. I've already given you a brief history of the fall of Babylon as it sunk into irrelevance. Let me give you a further description of the fall of Babylon, a little more detailed. It was from one of my commentators, and unfortunately I didn't write down who it was. But let's start here. First of all, after a siege of 2 years, the city of Babylon was captured by Cyrus. That was in 539. Significant damage to the city was not inflicted at this time, though some of the walls may have been broken down at least partially. And then, following a rebellion of the Babylonian subjects, Darius Histopes, that's Darius I, took the city again in 520 BC, roughly. That was the time when that Persian noble chopped off his ears and his nose to pretend that the Persians had treated him badly, and therefore he is now defecting to the Babylonians so that he can help them fight those nasty Persians. But then he betrayed the Babylonians by opening the gates. Well, that was 520 or so. And then Xerxes, who ruled from 485 to 465 over the Persian Empire, the Temple of Bel was plundered and destroyed. Much of the city was turned into ruins in 483 BC, and the walls were dismantled further. And now we go to the time of Alexander the Great in 331 BC. Babylon again fell to Alexander as he neared the city. Priests and nobles went out to meet him with lavish gifts, surrendering the city. Alexander proposed that he would rebuild the Temple of Marduk. He employed 10,000 men to clear the dirt and rubble. They labored in vain for 2 months. Alexander died and the work was abandoned, which is interesting in light of Jeremiah's prophecy that nobody's ever going to inhabit the city again. Alexander the Great tried to get it back on its feet and failed. In 270, Antiochus Soter, he was one of the successor Greek rulers of the Alexandrian Greek Empire. He restored several of the temples in Babylon, but the general decay of the city continued. Finally, in the time of Strabo, that's at the end of the 1st century BC, the site was in ruins. By the time we get to Jerome, which is 4th century AD, in the 300s, Jerome learned that Babylon had been used as a wild game park for the amusement of numerous Persian dignitaries. A century later, in the 5th century, according to Cyril of Alexandria, due to the bursting of canal banks, Babylon became a swamp. Now we move on up to 1791. Volney, the French atheist who was such a militant adversary of the Bible, wrote his book called The Ruins of Empires. Therein he stated, "Nothing is left of Babylon but heaps of earth trodden under foot of men." It's ironic that a skeptic should lend support to confirming the accuracy of the biblical narrative, is it not? Well, that's 1791. Now let's go to 1856 when archaeologist Austin Liard explored Babylon in the mid-19th century. He described the heaps of rubbish that rendered the area a, quote, naked and hideous waste. Later, when Robert Koldewey excavated the city for 18 seasons, beginning in 1899, he said that as he gazed over the ruins, he could not help but be reminded of Jeremiah 50:39. That's our verse. Nobody's going to inhabit this city except owls and hyenas. Koldewey reported that many of the sites were covered with 40 to 80 feet of sand and rubble. And a gentleman named Boyd in 1969 says a relatively modern air view of Babylonia, once the world's greatest city, shows only a mound of dirt and broken down walls. You can see a picture of Babylon in Wikipedia, and you can see Jeremiah had it right. It's gone. It's deserted. Nothing but desert creatures and hyenas and owls living there now. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Jeremiah chapter 50. We are prepared to go to Jeremiah 51. In our next audio, I will take up the first 32 verses of chapter 51, and we will call this The Utter Destruction of Babylon, Part A. Not much different than the title of chapter 50, which is Judgment on Babylon. Chapter 51 is going to be The Utter Destruction of Babylon. First half of the chapter. I hope you stay tuned for our discussion of that, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.